as if deciding in this exact moment whether or not to trust me. We've been building ships, training soldiers, recruiting men and women from the outlying islands. In a few months' time, we'll start by destroying their navy. Then when the Frostbloods are scrambling, we'll be ready to invade. A tremor ripped through my body. Her plans to attack by sea were one thing, but a land invasion would be suicide. I couldn't help but think back to King Rasmus, who had also taken foolish risks in his military campaigns. The king must have heard of my plan somehow, she continued, and he decided to strike first. I just cannot figure out why he came himself. You are so, so wrong about this, I said hoarsely. Talk to the king. Not an interrogation, just speak to him. Discuss this as the rational people that you are. He would never do what you're saying. He has no desire to conquer you or anyone else. She watched me keenly. He hasn't told you anything then. She sagged backward into the chair ever so slightly. I think you're telling the truth. You know nothing. I leaned forward urgently. I know that he would never do what you're suggesting. She swept my assertions away with one manicured hand. You are no use to me in this. I am disappointed. I must find another way to discover his plans, starting by questioning the king himself. She nodded, as if she'd asked and answered a question in her mind. After your initiation, I will persuade him to see reason. My blood heated further. You're not listening to me. I don't want... You may go, Ruby. I will see you tomorrow. Gripped with anger at her cool dismissal, I spoke before I could consider my words. Maybe, maybe not. Her head turned slowly, tension straining her jaw. What precisely do you mean, child? I couldn't let my temper get the better of me. I needed to negotiate. What did I have to bargain with? She believed I was the princess. That was leverage. Who am I to you? I demanded. She swept me with an irritated glance. You are my niece, my heir. I assume you have much to teach me and many things you want me to do in my new role. You want me to be willing to do those things, don't you? You want me to be loyal? But you also want that loyalty to be genuine. Am I wrong? You're not wrong, she admitted. So when you talk of interrogating Arcus, how do you think I'm going to respond? He's been my steadfast ally, whether you want to acknowledge it or not. When you threaten him, it makes me want to defy you. She stared at me thoughtfully for a few beats. Let me ask you this, Ruby. Who am I to you? You're the queen. The title of aunt seemed far too cozy for the stone-hearted ruler sitting across from me. The queen, she emphasized. Am I your queen? Will you pledge your life to me at tomorrow's initiation? I wonder if you harbor some doubts about where your loyalty belongs. In fact, I'm starting to have some doubts of my own. I was nearing another patch of quicksand. Isn't that natural, to doubt? Certainly. But that doesn't make it desirable. Not in one of my masters. Not when the kingdom might be on the brink of war, not in my heir. So, who, I ask again, am I to you? I wanted to say that I would never fight in her war, but she held Arcus's life in her hands. She could hurt me all she liked, but I wouldn't let her take her wrath out on him. Rebellion was a luxury I couldn't afford. You are my queen, I forced out. Then stop pushing me. The words came as a low-voiced warning. Her face remained smooth and controlled, but her nostrils flared, her eyes gleaming with fathoms of dormant embers ready to combust. Beneath her polished veneer, a cauldron of tempestuous power. I had a moment of startled recognition. Her emotions were like mine, quick, fervent, near the surface. Perhaps she had trouble controlling them too. A part of me felt a kinship with her, whether I liked it or not. If you'll excuse me, she said in a lighter tone, I have much to do before the wedding. Be ready for the seamstress. She will come this afternoon to measure you for your wedding gown. As I rose and curtsied, my hands curled into fists. Once the initiation was over, she would turn her attentions to Arcus. She'd all but said she planned to talk to him for information tomorrow. I couldn't keep waiting and watching. I needed to act. As I strode angrily from the anteroom, I noticed the Frostblood servant standing sentinel in the throne room, his back against the wall next to the fireplace. A spurt of indignation heated my skin further. The Queen must have chosen that spot deliberately, a punishment for being a Frostblood, no doubt. How uncomfortable it must be for him, standing for long periods so close to that blazing heat. He let nothing show on his face, though. He'd had years to perfect that blank look. At least twice as many years as I'd been alive, from the look of the harsh creases in the finely drawn map of his skin. I approached him slowly, still deciding how to play this. I needed him to trust me. You know the Frost King is a captive in this castle. I left a moment of silence for him to fill. He kept his eyes aimed at the wall behind me.
Yes, Your Highness.
His voice was as rusty as an iron bucket left in the rain. Did no one ever talk to him? My heart contracted in a brief pulse of sympathy. It had been like that in Black Creek Prison when Captain Drake first captured me. I could have melted into the stone floor or frozen to the iron bars of the cell, becoming just another fixture in the prison, and it wouldn't have mattered. I have a theory, I said. The tunnels under the lava fields. They were created by Frostblood servants, weren't they? He swallowed, but didn't speak. I saw some carvings in the walls during my first trial. Frostblood symbols I've seen on pillars in the King's castle. Now, why would the Fireblood Masters of Sudesia carve Frostblood symbols into their tunnels? He didn't even blink. I tried not to be impatient, praying I wasn't wasting my time. They wouldn't, of course, I answered myself, which means Frostbloods were there. I think they dug those tunnels and left marks on them, something that was precious, a tribute or an act of rebellion. Most of them died, didn't they? The heat, the lava. So many ways for a Frostblood to suffer, despite all that thick, frozen skin. The King has burn scars. I bet you have some too. One of his hands twitched. A butterfly's wing of movement. A tiny, telling reaction. There aren't many Frostbloods left here, are there? I asked. He shook his head. I bet it was you who made the container of ice for my second trial. Suspended on a bridge? Is that right? He nodded. Do you know the tunnels? If he could navigate for me, we might be able to use them to get Arcus back to his ship. The Queen plans to interrogate the King, and I don't think she'll be gentle about it. He shook his head, his lips pressing together until they turned white. Encouraged, I went on. You don't know King Arcanus, but I can tell you that he is a good king, a good person. He doesn't deserve what Queen Nalani plans to do with him. No reaction. I tried a different tack. Have you ever been to Tempesia? Most of it is covered in snow for more than half the year. In the north, they barely have a summer at all. There are festivals in the mountains to celebrate the snow. Frostblood craftsmen create magnificent sculptures out of ice. I know the king would take you on his ship. You could live among your own people. His eyes held longing. But he shook his head once again. I sighed in frustration. What's your name?
Broderick.
Broderick, are you a Frostblood or not? The king has no one to help him but me, and I can't do it alone. I watched him, waiting. I was about to give up when he gave a hesitant nod. My heart leaped. If you can tell me anything, anything at all that might...
She plans to move him after the initiation.
he whispered. I had to lean in to hear him.
He'll be transferred to the prison tomorrow morning. I overheard her telling her personal guard.
Panic gripped my chest. Tomorrow?
Yes.
So she'd already been planning to move him to the prison for interrogation before I'd even spoken to her. Questioning me must have been an afterthought, or a way of gaining information. Either way, this meant her plans for him were firmly in place.
Don't you know anything that could help? I asked. If you don't know the way through the tunnels, is there anyone else who does?
He hesitated before saying in a rush,
The only people who use the tunnels are the Masters, and sometimes Prince Iko. But there's no sense asking any of them.
His eyes darted to the corner and back to me, widening.
Go, she's coming.
He returned to his blank-faced stare. The door to the anteroom started to open. I slipped from the throne room. There was no doubt where I had to go next. If Prince Iko sometimes used the tunnels, perhaps he had a map. Queen Nalani had said that the prince slept late in the mornings. A perfect time to search his observatory. Chapter 24. I vaulted up the observatory tower stairs and entered the room at the top, narrowing my eyes against the sudden brightness. The round room was well lit by three tall windows and crowded with tables, bookshelves, nautical instruments, and metal contraptions I had no name for. I swept towards the nearest bookshelf, which also held rolled-up maps. I had another reason for searching the observatory. Ever since my failed mission in the library, the whereabouts of the book had played on my mind. Prince Iko had intercepted me the night I'd broken in. He'd known I was looking for something, and certainly seemed to know more than he was saying. If he had the book, where better to store it than among 100 other volumes in a tower used only by him? I traced my fingers over the spines of books, then pulled scrolls from their perch on the shelves, unrolling and tossing them aside one by one. There was nothing neat or methodical about this. Prince Iko would know his inner sanctum had been ransacked, but I had no time to be careful.
"Can I help you with something?" an amused voice asked.
I jumped and whirled, recovering my composure with a glare.
"You startled me."
Prince Iko sat on a chair tucked into the shadows between an armoire and a painted screen, making him almost indiscernible at first glance.
"It's my observatory," he pointed out.
I cleared my throat, opting to be blunt. He had shown me in small ways that he wanted to gain my trust. I hoped I wasn't wrong about him. "When you followed me to the school that night, you told me to come see you when I realized my time had run out."
"I'm out of time."
"You were looking at my bookshelf rather hopefully," he remarked. "There's a book I need. And I have a theory you might have it." I wasn't ready to tell him I needed a map of the tunnels. Telling him about the book would be a safer way to gauge whether he was willing to help me. He didn't even ask which book. He just pointed. "Bottom shelf, far right, behind the volume on ocean currents of the vast sea." I hadn't expected him to tell me so easily. Hiding my surprise, I bent and found the book. The creation of the throne stood out in gold letters on the black leather cover. I touched the spine with reverence, lifting the book gingerly and placing it on the table. Elation and relief made my hands tremble.
"You had it this whole time," I breathed, opening to the first page.
"For a while, anyway. Long enough to translate the old tongue and understand most of its contents. The Masters have the knowledge, but they do nothing with it." He paused, as if deciding whether or not to go on. "They don't care if my wife is taken over by a curse. They only care about the power the throne gives her."
"So the throne is on Seer." Triumph surged through me. In my dream, the throne had been in an underground cavern. Once again, I wondered if Sage was sending me visions. "Does the Queen know?"
"No.
She believes it was destroyed in the last eruption. Only the masters, and I, know the truth. Shortly after Rota disappeared, their father, King Tolak, died, and there was an uprising on some of the islands. The masters saw that series of tragedies as a sign that the curse was awakening in the throne. The curse has periods of dormancy and activity, according to the book. At any rate, when a volcanic eruption occurred within months of Nalani being crowned, the masters saw an opportunity to hide the throne, to claim it had been destroyed. In truth, the castle was destroyed, but the throne remained. As there seemed no way of destroying it, the best they could do was hide the throne, hoping the distance would protect the queen. Is that all in the book, or did the masters tell you? He shook his head. The book is ancient, and the masters are an outrageously secretive lot. No, I confess I found out by accident. Years ago, while using the tunnels between the observatory and the castle, I sometimes noticed a master or two passing by. One day, I followed. I saw the cavern where they kept the throne and the guard who was always posted. You're convinced the curse is affecting the queen? I am. I noticed changes in Nalani when King Rasmus took the throne in Tempesia. Her understandable grief and anger at his massacring Firebloods could have accounted for the changes, but I began to grow nervous. I started actively trying to find out more. Finally, I stole the book. Are her veins black? That's a sure sign of possession. He came forward, close to the other side of the table, and gestured to the book. A black vein is a sign of full possession by the Minax. But the creature exercises a lesser influence on people outside its immediate vicinity. Even with the throne hidden at a distance from the castle, the curse affects the queen, although the changes in behavior are less obvious. At first, I didn't want to see the signs, but when she had the Frostbloods executed... He broke off. His expression darkened. That is not the woman I married. And now she's planning a war she can't win. That's exactly the kind of thing the Minax craves. Death and chaos and all the lovely grief that follows. All this time, the Minax had been right under my nose. May I show you something? Iko reached forward and flipped through the book, pointing when he found the page he sought. There. An illustration showed me two indistinct figures, one throwing fire and one throwing ice, the two streams meeting in the center to form a blue-white flame directed at a dark, orange-veined throne. A Fireblood and a Frostblood creating frostfire, destroying the throne of Sud. He turned to the next page. The throne was gone. In its place was an oval outlined in black, a malevolent pair of eyes staring out of it. Even the illustration was enough to make the back of my neck prickle. The Minax, he said calmly, trapped in a remaining shard of the throne. I've translated the ancient Sudesian, and the instructions are quite specific. The shard must be at least as large as an ancient Sudesian coin. He opened a small wooden box and produced a gold coin, which wasn't much larger than modern Tempesian ones. A smaller stone would risk its escape. But how could anyone know this? Well, Pernilius devoted his life to recording the prophecies of Dru. She was a prophetess, I know. I understand enough. We need to destroy the throne with frostfire, but keep the Minax trapped in a shard of the throne. And then what? A friend of mine in Tempesia found something that indicates a Minax can destroy another. Could I use the shard to kill the other Minax? Only one who can master or control the Minax can use one against the other. What was the phrasing in the book? He flipped a few pages and translated. Only shadow can create shadow. Only shadow can move shadow. Only shadow can destroy shadow. It seems we cannot destroy the shadow in the throne without the other one. The best option is to trap the Minax in the shard and remove it from the island completely. And who is going to do that? You, I hope. On the ship of your friend the king, if he is willing. I nodded.
Arcas would surely agree once he knew that removing the curse from the Queen's Island might be our best chance to prevent a war. If the Queen was free of the Minax, she might change her position on Frostbloods. And I needed to take the shard back to Tempesia to destroy the Frost Minax. We'll need to get him back to his ship once the throne is destroyed, I said. I hear you know the tunnels well.
As well as the masters themselves.
Some question lingered at the back of my mind. I turned the page to the illumination of Frostfire destroying the throne, then stared, narrow-eyed, at Prince Iko. What a happy coincidence that the two people you needed to make Frostfire ended up in Sudesia.
Not such a coincidence, he admitted hesitantly. I suspected you had royal blood after hearing that you melted the Throne of Fours.
You see, Panilius believed only the gifts of two people of royal blood can make Frostfire. When Nilani sent Prince Kai to recruit you, I suggested to him that if it turned out your situation in the Frost Court was unsafe, he should bring you here and I would smooth things over with the Queen.
Lucky for you that I was in danger then.
It wasn't luck so much as probability.
It was likely that you would be in danger. The Frost Court isn't known for its acceptance of Firebloods, to put it mildly.
What about Arcas? The mysterious letter implying I was in danger.
I sent the letter to lure him here, instructing Kai to have it delivered before he left port, and only if he was bringing you to Sudesia. He had no idea of the letter's contents, so do not blame him. I gambled that you were the princess, and, if so, I needed the king to come here so you could destroy the throne together. There was certainly no way Nilani would see past the Minax's influence. She'd never agree to combine her fire with your king's frost. You lured him here to possible torture and death. Did you ever think about that? I stared at him, the flames in my heart burning hotter. He leaned in urgently.
I've done everything I could to protect him, as I have with you. I instructed the scouts to avoid the eastern edge of the island, creating false reports that it had already been searched. I assumed his ship was most likely to find a hiding place there. I've kept Nilani from questioning him until now. But you must understand, the risks to him were secondary to my goal. I did all this to protect my wife. I love her more than anything.
This was too much. If what he was saying was true, it meant I did have royal blood, because Arcas and I had created Frostfire when we'd melted the Throne of Fours. If the book was right, I really was the Queen's niece.
You couldn't just tell me all of this from the beginning? You let me take the trials, risk my life, for nothing!
Not for nothing. Your training has made you stronger. And I needed the trials to reveal whether you were truly the princess.
I pulled from his grasp and looked down at the book, forcing myself to take a moment to think. I hated being manipulated. I hated lies and subterfuge. He'd not only risked my life by letting me take the trials, he'd put Arcas in danger too. My emotions were raw. My chest hurt, as if my very heart were bruised. I felt like a fool for not seeing through him. I lifted my head and looked at Prince Iko. He was watching me anxiously, one hand clutching an oval pendant that hung from his neck on a silver chain. As his thumb caressed the smooth ivory, I saw that it was a miniature of Queen Nilani, her distinctive features replicated with tiny, delicate brushstrokes. My heart gave a little squeeze. He wore an image of his wife around his neck. There was nothing deliberate about his nervous gesture, his hold on this small likeness that gave him comfort. It was clear that he truly did love her. I let out a long sigh and asked myself one question. What wouldn't I do to protect Arcas? I could hardly blame Prince Iko for doing what I would have done in his shoes. Besides, we had a common goal. I needed the Minax to destroy the other one, and he needed to get rid of it. When? I asked. Prince Iko looked confused, so I added, when do we melt the throne? He blinked, and his lips curved in a tentative smile full of warmth and gratitude. As soon as possible. Arcus is being transferred to the prison tomorrow after the initiation. We don't have much time. His face lost color. If she's sending him to the prison, I'm assuming she means to interrogate him. That's not the worst of it. He looked disturbed. I heard her saying she wants to send a message to the Frost Court. She has spoken of how the king's death would plunge Tempesia into chaos. If she plans to send him to the prison already, that means she intends to carry out her plans sooner than I thought. I couldn't breathe. It felt as if someone had grabbed my throat and squeezed. No, I whispered. She'll kill him? She doesn't make idle threats. The blood abandoned my limbs, making my legs weak. Somehow, I had to get him out immediately. I picked up the book and turned toward the door. Ruby, wait! We must plan! I closed my eyes and halted. For a second, he'd reminded me of Brother Thistle when he'd warned me not to take unnecessary risks. You're right, I said through numb lips. The initiation ceremony tomorrow. I no longer needed to take my vows to keep the Queen's trust or to access the knowledge of the book. And saving Arcus was far more important than becoming a Fireblood Master, no matter how much I'd longed to gain their acceptance. But what would be the consequences to Kai? Would the Queen still allow him to go through the initiation if I didn't show up? Would she revoke his rights to his title and land? Would she take her disappointment and anger out on him? I had no choice but to hope that she wouldn't. I had to trust that the Queen was honourable enough to keep her word. Prince Iko picked up on the idea immediately. The Masters will be there, as well as the Queen. The throne should be unguarded. That is our best chance.
Chapter 25. Morning crept in furtively, a burglar skulking behind black storm clouds. The ocean had darkened to the grey of dirty bathwater, the white caps like leftover soap foam. Treetops genuflected to the sky and branches snapped off and sailed away like poplar fluff. Rain lashed the island in horizontal sheets, raging in from the east. It was the morning of my initiation. I dressed in my leggings and tunic, then covered those with the clothing provided, accepting Ada's help to put on the loose-sleeved orange silk robe covered in golden embroidery. Metal wrist guards were embossed with the shape of licking flames. Silk ribbons secured a satin cloak around my neck. If anyone saw me, they'd think I was fully prepared to pledge my life to the Queen today. Ada smoothed my hair back and wound it in a simple knot. My face in the mirror appeared stark, almost lifeless, the bones protruding more than usual. My pupils were small in the meagre light, leaving amber-gold irises below thick, dark lashes. A princess? No. I looked like a terrified warrior before her first battle. So many things could go wrong. If any one of the moving parts of our plan went awry, it would throw the rest into chaos. Kai appeared in the open doorway as Ada disappeared. Ready? He asked. Everything about him, from his bright hair, rich-toned skin, and engaging grin, adding sunshine to the grey day. He was dressed like me, though his tunic hugged the muscles of his shoulders and a chest a little more lovingly than mine, and his polished black knee boots added a touch of style. You're early, I pointed out. But I had expected him to be early. Counted on it, in fact. He jerked his head toward the hallway.
Carriage is waiting.
I sat at my dressing table to pull on my calfskin boots. When I stood, I made a show of stumbling, stepping hard on the hem of my cloak. The stitches I'd pre-loosened gave way with a gratifyingly loud rip. Half of the cloak's collar fell at an odd angle against my shoulder. I cursed and scowled at it. Kai chuckled and shook his head in wonderment, stepping close to inspect the damage.
Did you just trip over nothing? Surely you'll be the clumsiest master ever to take the vows.
His elegant fingers explored the delicate fabric.
Quite a tear. But I don't suppose they'll reject you for it. The masters don't worry much over sartorial concerns.
I quirked a brow. You'll be wasted as a fire-blood master, then. He grinned.
I don't have to wear the robes all the time, little bird.
He hadn't called me by that nickname since the night we kissed. The reminder brought heat to my chest. He was standing very close. I could feel the heat of his body and smell the scent of his skin. To avoid whatever was brewing in his warm, intent eyes, I untied my cloak and folded it over my arm. I'll get Ada to mend this. It won't take a minute. You go on without me. His face flickered with annoyance.
I'm capable of waiting for a few minutes.
No, I'm nervous enough as it is without you tapping your foot in the hallway. Plus, I have to find Ada, and it might take longer than a few minutes. I'll meet you at the school. I swept into the hallway, and he fell into step beside me. I avoided his eyes, sensing his growing consternation and not wanting to give myself away. The urge to blurt out the truth was gaining force with every second. I hated keeping things from him, but I'd thought about this all night and decided not to involve him in Arcus's escape, not to mention the highly punishable act of melting the throat of Sood. The queen might forgive her own husband for his treason, but Kai was merely a well-liked and useful courtier who already had past strikes against him. I didn't want him to lose all he'd worked for, not for my sake. I'd shared my fears with Prince Iko, and he had sworn to do everything in his power to protect Kai from any backlash when I didn't attend the initiation ceremony. He was sure the Queen would see reason, and that she would uphold her promises to Kai.
Ruby,
Kai said softly, touching my shoulder with three fingers as we reached the bottom of the tower stairs. I drew to a halt.
Is everything all right?
I took a steadying breath and forced a smile. Everything is fine. I just want to look perfect for the initiation ceremony.
Far be it from me to criticize you for attention to your wardrobe.
His voice softened.
You're sure nothing is wrong? This is a big step. I'd be lying if I didn't admit I was terrified too.
But the benefit of taking the vows outweigh the sacrifice of some of our freedoms. I know, I said, staring resolutely at his chest so I didn't have to see his concern. I was so close to breaking down, I could feel the confession forming on my tongue. No matter how I reasoned that Kai would be fine, I couldn't help a surge of worry on his behalf, and lying was a poor way of repaying everything he'd done for me. He hesitated before adding,
"You know you have to go through with it now, don't you? She expects it, especially from you. It would be dangerous to refuse."
"I just want to get my cloak mended." I forced myself to meet his eyes. "All right." He stared at me for another few seconds, then lifted my shin with his index finger and warned,
"But if you're late, I'll make you pay for drinks at the tavern later."
"Deal," I said, wishing again that I didn't have to lie. I waved him off with a smile, my gut twisting with guilt and nerves. For all I knew, it could be the last time I saw him. The realization sent shockwaves through my body. It would hurt me far more than I wanted to admit to myself. I would miss him fiercely. I watched until he moved out of sight, imprinting his bright hair and the lean athleticism of his movements into my memory. When he was gone, I allowed myself a moment to stare at the empty doorway, my chest aching. With a cleansing breath, I shoved the feelings away. There was no time to spare. I threw the cloak into a corner and raced toward the North Tower. When I reached the hallway at the top, I slowed, relieved to see Prince Iko already there. Two guards waited outside of Arcus's door instead of the requisite six. When they saw me, they wore twin expressions of confusion.
"Princess Ruby,"
Prince Iko said with feigned surprise. I just sent the other guards to attend you at your ceremony, as the Queen requested. His act was entirely unconvincing to my ears. I would warn him later never to consider a career on the stage. I came back for something. We hadn't exactly rehearsed the details of this part. You didn't give me... I stepped closer to one guard, unable to think of anything I might need from the Queen's consort. Ah, yes, he said, making a show of reaching under his cloak. I assume you mean this? With his free hand, he grabbed the guard's halberd and tossed it away, while with the other he pulled out a dagger in a lightning movement, putting it to the guard's throat. I did the same thing with my guard, though my dagger came from my sleeve. We had rehearsed this part. Open the door, I ordered, staring into the furious eyes of the guard. No, he said clearly, his jaw defiantly squared. You get points for loyalty, I pushed the blade to his skin. I'm sure you'll get special recognition for that at your funeral. I made a motion as if to draw the edge across his throat, hoping he wouldn't notice the blade was ceremonial and as dull as a butter knife. His eyes rounded. I'll be dismissed if I allow you in. I assure you, Prince Heiko said. The blame will be all mine. I give you my word you won't suffer for this. The guards glanced at each other out of the corners of their eyes. Then my guard motioned to the other, who produced a key and unlocked the door. Uh-uh, I cautioned when my guard twitched. Stay still until I tell you to move. As the door swung open, Arcus's voice came low and resonant, sending a shiver across my skin.
Is this my cue that I've overstayed my welcome?
He grinned at me from the doorway. Despite the tension in my chest, I smiled back. On the contrary, answered Iko lightly. My wife would like you to stay, but I think you'll find our plans preferable. Arcus looked surprised to see Prince Iko, but he deftly moved into the hallway out of the way of the guards, and we pushed them inside the room, keeping our blades raised. Prince Iko said, You have no other key, I take it? Be honest, or my promise to protect you from consequences is void.
No other key, one said sullenly, and the other nodded.
Your breastplate and helm? I said with an impatient motion to the taller guard. When he handed them to me, I gave them to Arcus. Put these on. Sorry about this, Prince Iko said to the guards in a cheerful tone. Someone will no doubt release you soon. Until then... He put a finger to his lips in a shushing motion. He locked them in and dropped the key into a pocket. Arcus slid the helm on and was buckling the leather breastplate as we swept down the hallway. I handed him the halberd I'd picked up off the floor. I gave the prince a sideways look as he passed me at the stairs. You enjoyed that too much. Intrigue is rather invigorating. I don't know why I don't engage in it more often.
Thank you for getting me out, Arcus said quietly from close behind me. Is my crew involved?
I shook my head. Morella was in no condition to plan anything, and the crew isn't big enough to face all the guards. You can thank Prince Iko for this. He gave orders so that most of the guards were otherwise occupied.
A well-executed plan, which I appreciate. Why is the prince helping us?
We have a common goal. I met his eyes and lowered my voice. To melt the throne and trap the Minax. I need your help for that part.
Of course.
He cleared his throat and said only slightly louder.
Thank you, Prince Iko.
It's you who will be helping me, Prince Iko said.
I'll breathe easier when the curse is far away.
As we reached the bottom of the stairs, I reminded Arcus quietly, Don't let anyone see your eyes. Frostblood eyes would stand out like bluebells in a bed of daisies. Luckily, the helm with its horizontal eye openings around the narrow nose guard left the upper half of his face in partial shadow. Arcus stuck close to the wall while Prince Iko and I stayed on the outside, so anyone passing wouldn't sense the waves of cold coming off his skin. His gift became harder to control in times of stress. One of the courtiers came around a corner, a heavy-set woman dressed in turquoise gown covered with tiny white ribbons. As she saw us, she smiled and curtsied, blocking our way.
Prince Aigo, shouldn't the princess be on her way to the initiation at the school? I'm on my way there now.
Prince Aigo cleared his throat.
We'll be along shortly, of course. I merely wish to...
Well now, Lady Zini, you're spoiling my surprise. I plan to give the princess a piece of jewellery for the occasion. Heirloom from the royal vault. She clapped her hands in delight.
What a splendid idea! I look forward to seeing you wearing it later, princess.
Aigo bent his tall form in a bow.
If you'll excuse us.
We left the curious lady behind. Arcas and I followed Prince Aigo along the colonnade of arched windows that ran between the towers, nodding at anyone we passed and praying they didn't engage us in conversation. I breathed a sigh of relief when we reached the south tower.
Hurry,
Aigo whispered, finally showing signs of strain as we moved through the empty entrance hall to a servant's door, which opened to a dark stairwell leading down.
There's a hidden entrance to the tunnels down here.
When we reached the musty lower level, he passed a few doors and opened one to a dusty storage room, filled with empty barrels and empty baskets. The prince slid a shelf away from the wall. A hidden door lurked behind it. He moved into the dim space and we followed. The torches were spaced far apart, with chunks of near darkness in between. Our footsteps echoed against the rock. As we went deeper in, the air thickened and heated. I listened with concern as Arcas's breath grew laboured. More tunnels branched off at random intervals, but Aigo didn't hesitate as he led us along. I tried to memorise the path, but after innumerable twists and turns, all the squiggly lines of my mental map blurred together. Now that we were safe from listening ears, I told Arcas what I knew about the throne, how Prince Aigo was convinced it was influencing the Queen, how the book said the throne could be melted with frostfire, how the Minax could be contained by a small shard. And if Brother Thistle is right, I concluded, then the shard containing the Fire Minax could be the key to destroying the Frost Minax. Eventually, the tunnel opened into a vast cavern. Black pillars stretched from floor to ceiling, disappearing as they exceeded the reach of light from wall-mounted torches. In the centre of the room, a large, blocky object glinted with pulsing veins of orange. The throne of Sud. Its presence dominated the air, commanded the flow of blood in my veins. Its power beat against me like great black raven wings, soft and swift and irrefutable. When I'd encountered the Frost Throne, I'd felt a sense of awe mixed with repulsion. Now the awe was there in full measure, but without the counterbalance of aversion. Instead, I trembled with the need to prostrate myself, to swear allegiance, to serve. My knees turned to water. I locked them to keep from crumpling to the floor. Arcas stood close, his hand briefly touching my elbow, but I was too overcome to respond. I exhaled, long and slow. A corresponding intake of breath came from the throne, as if the sacrifice of air from my lungs provided the first full, satisfying breath it had taken in an age. I knew from experience that no one could hear the Minax but me. A whispering started. A silky caress.
I have waited. I have waited. You are here. You are here.
The Fire Minax tugged at something inside me, as if a thread connected a spot behind my ribcage to the consciousness in the throne. How I longed to rush forward and fling myself against it, like an insect against a lit window. Yes, I'm here, I thought. Then shook myself. I was aware of the Minax in the same way one is aware of a gentle rain pattering on the roof. The whispers rustled in my mind, persuading rather than demanding, a ceaseless backdrop of chatter.
You are here. You are here. Come closer.
come to me. It took vigilant effort not to obey. I put my head against the bumpy rock wall and closed my eyes. I counted to 100 in Sudesian, anything to keep my mind busy, to drown out the compulsion to move closer to the voice. "We have very little time," Prince Iko reminded me sharply. I struggled to regain focus. By now, the Fireblood Masters would have realized I was late for the initiation ceremony. They might be searching. If they found us, not only would we lose our chance of destroying the throne, but Arcus would face recapture. If the Queen had decided to execute him, I didn't know if I could stop her. We had to work fast and get him back to his ship. I might even be able to leave with him, if we could melt the throne. If the book was right that a shard would contain the Minax. A shiver ripped through me as I finally realized the odds against us.
"Ruby, are you ready?"
Arcus asked, leaning close. I nodded. We moved toward the throne in tandem. I knew the exact moment the Fire Minax noticed Arcus's presence. "Frostblood!" The bloodthirsty cry echoed in my mind. I clapped my hands over my ears. Even Arcus seemed to sense it. He recoiled, the sudden jolt and catch of his muscles making him tremble slightly, as if he were an arrow shot into the ground. I spoke softly, because the throne was on edge, its consciousness straining toward Arcus the way a dog tugs at the end of its leash when it sees a nice fat rabbit nearby. Everything in me wanted to soften the Minax's craving, to appease it. With my voice, if not my actions. "Kill him. Kill him," the throne chanted. "Stop it," I whispered to the throne. "You don't need his death. You have the blood of all the Frostblood servants who made these tunnels." "Not enough. Never enough," the throne chanted. "Powerful beyond measure. His frost vastly strong. His death would be a feast. Yours for the killing, daughter of darkness. To make you strong beyond measure, your fire and your dark, unmatched power, incendiary power, bliss." I turned my back on it angrily, my whole body shaking with the effort of separating its desires from my own. "Arcus," I said, trying to reclaim myself, to reassert my identity. "Remember, the shard must be no smaller than a coin." The Minax screamed, a howling excoriation of the quiet places in my mind, like a gale force wind that scrapes mountains bare. I covered my ears, but the sound was inside me, shearing my nerve endings and stabbing through my veins. My shoulder bashed the rough wall as I tried to escape. Then arms came around me.
"Ruby, I'm here. You're not alone. We have to do this."
The low rumble of Arcus's voice soothed me. I grabbed his collar and held on as the scream faded. "It wants..." I shook my head, eyes wide but unseeing, as if the sound had stolen all other senses.
"Don't listen to it," he said, pulling my attention back with his commanding tone. "Listen to me. You can do this. We can."
He held me tight for a few seconds, his cold lips pressing firm kisses to the top of my head, brushing the pulse at my temple, gliding across my cheek. Everything else faded as the mindless pleasure of feeling his cool lips took every ounce of my attention. It had been so long since we'd touched like this. I realized in that moment how scared I'd been that he would never hold me again. Layers of distance between us fell away, melted by his hands curved tenderly over my shoulders, a gentle brush of lips on my forehead. I wanted to burrow into the comfort he offered and live there for a while, cherished and protected. The reassuring scent of his skin calmed me, and I drew strength from his sighs, from his natural self-assurance, from his steadfast belief in me. When I felt ready, I nodded and pushed him away, straightening. "Let's get it done," I said, all calm resolution on the outside, while my insides quaked with nerves.
"If you melt the rock completely, you will free it," Prince Iko warned. You must leave a portion intact.
Do not trust him. Do not trust him, said the Minax. This throne is yours for the taking. Our union will bring you extraordinary power. Embrace me.
I know, I replied to Prince Iko, shoving the voice away. Arcus, I'm not myself right now. I may lose track of the size of the shard. His eyes were shadowed, but I felt their intensity. I'll tell you when to stop. We moved forward until we stood about 2 arm lengths from the throne, close enough to attack, but far enough that I couldn't touch it. I knew instinctively that physical contact with the throne was dangerous for me. The Frost Minax had been an invasion, an insidious voice in my head. The Fire Minax felt like an extension of self, a universe where I could happily dwell forever. I shuddered. It was my enemy. My enemy. I began with a stream of fire. A simple blast of pure orange flame directed at the line where the seat and back met, what I thought of as its heart. Arcus welded a ribbon of ice to my fire. The fire and frost curled together, 2 separate strands that merged into 1 writhing cataract, flowing like a torrent of glistening blue-white water, sinuous and elegant. Blue sparks flared from the column like shooting stars before winking out. I shut my eyes against the blinding light, so bright it filtered through my eyelids. The room suddenly felt cooler, like a summer day when a cloud moves over the sun. The Minax thrashed in agony, its voice grating like knives dragged over chainmail.
Cold! Cold! Hate it! Stop him! Kill him!
I felt its burning, stinging, unbearable hurt as my own.
Ruby, Akka said sharply, look at me.
I couldn't. Couldn't answer, couldn't even shake my head. I couldn't do anything but throw out fire, and I could barely do that. Pain. So much pain. Any more of this and I would...
Ruby, look at me.
Somehow, my muscles obeyed and my head turned. When I opened my eyes, circles of white danced over my vision as if I'd stared directly into the sun. I blinked hard until I could see. Arcus's pupils were pinpoints, his irises bleached almost white by the reflection of the strange, bright fire. He scrutinized me, searching my eyes, then my wrists. I realized he was searching me for signs of possession. I turned back to check our progress. The throne wept lava, now reduced to a misshapen blob about half its original size. I gritted my teeth, maintaining the flow. My limbs shook with fatigue. It felt as if I were destroying myself.
You can do this, Arcus said, his confidence bolstering mine.
I shut my eyes again. More fire, more pain. Time crawled. When I opened my eyes, I saw our progress was too slow. I was shaky and exhausted, and the throne was still only half melted. Lava oozed from it in rivulets, sliding towards the edges of the room. In a moment of inspiration, I used my gift to gather the lava on the floor, lifting it and forcing it back toward the throne. The lava joined the frost fire, bursting with blue-white light and heating to a painful degree. Arcus gasped. There was a shuffle as he changed position, backing up to put a few inches more distance between him and the lava. The throne melted faster, its outline flattening and shrinking. My fire was nearly spent. I closed my eyes to focus, hoping my last shreds of endurance would be enough. A shift. A change. The Minax's pain turned to anticipation. Excitement. Its prison was melting. Its tether had nearly snapped.
So close.
Stop, Ruby, stop!
Arcus put shaking hands on my shoulders, leaning heavily on me as he brought me back to myself.
It's done.
I reined in my fire. A rogue wave of relief knocked my legs out from under me. Arcus was as unsteady as I was, and I brought him down with me. We stayed on our knees, breathing heavily.
One of his arms went around my waist, and he pulled me against him, my back against his chest.
"So close to freedom," the Minax raged. "True vessel, please."
Its grief was so acute, I lifted my hand to comply, to try to melt the small, flat shard of rock that sat where the throne had been. Arcus caught my hand in his own and gently pulled my arm down.
"It's done, Ruby."
I shuddered. Then, pulled by an unbearably strong compulsion, I broke free of his hold and picked up the shard. It was smaller than my palm and felt like the kind of smooth stone you'd find in a riverbed. A sharp sensation of extreme heat flooded my arm and eased into numbness. My head spun, and then nothing hurt at all. I was suddenly floating, incandescent. I held the shard to my cheek. It was as smooth as silk, soft as fur. It caressed me like a mother's hand. "True vessel," it said. Its voice was my voice, its thoughts my thoughts. Finally, it breathed. "Alone for so long, now we will be one." This is what I'd come to Sedesia to find. Suddenly I knew that this was the real reason I'd trained and bled and tested my limits with the Fireblood Masters. For this moment. The shard was swept from my hand. It fell to the floor, bouncing and tumbling end over end until it settled, glistening black, into the shallow indentation where the throne had been. I screeched and dove after it, a vice-like grip wrapped around my upper arm. "Don't touch it!" There was a strange, animal keening. It took me a second to realize it came from my own throat. I struggled against Arcus's restraining hand, heat building my chest. I needed to burn him, anything to make him let me go. The Minax was still trapped in that shard, and I needed it. I needed the Minax with me, part of me, forever. I threw myself forward. His arms clamped tighter, and I was lifted off the floor, my feet kicking ineffectually. I put my head forward, preparing to slam the back of it into his face, when his voice rumbled at my ear.
"Ruby, please, remember who you are, who I am."
His arms were cold around me. Heat came off me in waves. I heard the unevenness of his breathing. This place, my heat, the lava, it must have been so uncomfortable for him. It was this awareness of him that made me come back to myself. I sucked in a breath and let out a sob. My muscles went slack. Arcus exhaled and relaxed.
"Come away from it."
He led me away from the shard. I could still see it from the corner of my eye. It winked invitingly, illuminated by the glow of lava just inches away. Prince Iko moved forward and scooped up the shard in a handkerchief, depositing it in a pocket. Arcus took my face in his hands, the cold from his fingers steadying me, the familiar blue of his eyes seizing my gaze and holding it, tethering me to him, to reality.
"It's all right,"
he said soothingly, but I could tell from the underlying tension in his voice that it wasn't.
"We have to leave."
Under normal circumstances, I would have taken action, offered options, given orders, but I couldn't think. Everything was hazy and blunted. The only clear thought that I wanted to get the shard back. As we moved toward the exit, Prince Iko led the way.
"I will take you to a branch that leads to the eastern side of the island where Ruby said the ship is hidden."
But as we neared the doorway, a silhouette blocked the opening. Chapter 26. The figure strolled forward, removing a huge black shawl that fell to the floor. Torchlight shimmered over wheat-gold hair and tinted her white gown with an angry light, making her look both celestial and terrifying. Shadows hollowed out her sunken cheeks. She still looked gaunt, but much stronger than I'd remembered from my visit to the ship.
"Morella," I murmured in amazement.
I glanced at Arcas. He looked shocked, then furious.